Hello and welcome again to the monthly news edition of the Kaspersky Daily Podcast. We're here, as always, with Chris Brook from ThreatPost. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well. Good to be here.
All right. For fear of running overtime, like last month, we're just going to go ahead and jump right in. OpenSSL's Heartbleed vulnerability was the story of the month, but I'm really kind of sick of talking about it, so I'm going to run through the facts as fast as I can. Heartbleed is a security vulnerability in an open-source cryptography implementation library called OpenSSL. The vulnerability emerged at the beginning of this month, and everyone everywhere has been talking about it ever since. And I mean everyone, from Barack Obama, to Ellen DeGeneres, to Oprah, to Matt Lauer. So I'm not actually really sure that either Ellen or Oprah, or even Matt Lauer, talked about it for that matter. But at any rate, the bug has just been being talked about everywhere. It could have given an attacker the ability to steal up to 64 kilobytes of memory while a user was interacting with a server that uses OpenSSL. And the reason that everyone's talking about it is because roughly two-thirds of the internet uses OpenSSL. The other problem is that part of that 64 kilobytes of memory could have been a private encryption key, which would render all communications with an afflicted server suspect at best, and totally compromised in the worst-case scenario. The bug was difficult to fix, requiring new certificates for all the millions of services using OpenSSL, and potential attacks are nearly impossible to detect. To put it briefly, Heartbleed essentially rendered two-thirds of the internet untrustable for the 2 to 3 years it existed out of the public eye. All this in a month where what we should have been talking about was the end of life for Windows XP.
Nice transition there, Brian.
I know.
Speaking of XP, Microsoft delivered its last batch of patches, of course, for XP this month, officially ending support for the operating system after 13 years. The patches, part of the company's regularly scheduled Patch Tuesday offerings, fixed a 0-day in Word that could have opened the program up to remote code execution, along with bugs in Internet Explorer, Windows, and the infrequently used Microsoft Publisher. All the patches figure into either XP or components of IE6 or Office 2003, two other products that Microsoft also ended support for this month. It's expected that many attackers will soon begin crafting exploits targeting XP now that Microsoft is done with it, but it remains to be seen exactly how many and how serious it'll be.
So, speaking of Windows updates, Microsoft announced a bit of an odd decision along with the April patch, which of course was when XP received its last patches. Apparently, any Windows 8 user that would like to receive Windows 8 security updates moving forward will need to install the April Windows 8.1 Patch Tuesday updates. That version is now what Microsoft calls the new servicing and support baseline. In other words, the earliest version you can have if you want to receive updates moving forward. If you have automatic updates turned on, then there is no need to worry about this. However, if you update manually, then you'll need to make sure you install the April patches if you'd like to get Windows security updates in the future. To be clear, this has no impact on Windows 7 or Vista users, or on XP users for that matter, who won't be getting updates anymore anyway.
Let's see, moving on here in our Microsoft news blowout, the Redmond-based company also announced this month that it will change the way it classifies adware this summer. Adware, of course, is the ubiquitous and often meddlesome brand of software that kind of toes the line between content and advertising. It's long been a hassle for internet users, I mean, as long as I can remember at least. Microsoft mandated that now ads must include an obvious way to close them, along with the name of the company that created them. If advertising doesn't conform to those rules by July 1st, Microsoft is going to look at that as adware and block it with its anti-malware products. Currently, when Microsoft detects a program is running suspiciously, the program is allowed to run and the user is alerted and then given an option to close it. On the 1st, Microsoft is going to stop it entirely, let the user know, and then give them the option to restore it if they want to. So, a little bit of a change there.
And from Microsoft to their cross-state arch nemesis, cross-Pacific Northwest arch nemesis, Apple fixed a number of security problems in both of its primary operating systems Those are its mobile offering, iOS, and its traditional desktop, OS X, for the uninitiated. One of the bugs, which is sort of like Heartbleed, is cryptography related. It could give an attacker the ability to intercept data on SSL connections. When I say SSL, what I mean is securely encrypted connections. In other words, the bug could give an attacker the ability to intercept communications that you're involved in that you thought were secure. So, if you run a Mac or an iPhone or an iPad or any other Apple-related devices, then you should head over to the App Store or iTunes or your settings, depending on where you install updates, and you should install these updates as soon as possible.
Let's see. Moving on to this AOL news. Internet users still clinging to the messaging and email app, AOL. I've had a tough month here. We first reported a few weeks ago on ThreatPost that a large number of AOL mail users appeared to have had their accounts spoofed. Spoofing, for those not know, are basically spam emails that appear to come from the victim, but are technically coming from the spammer's email account. Scores of users complained that they were spamming their friends with suspicious-looking links on Twitter. Really, though, the whole situation looked a little fishy from the get-go. Of course, it wasn't a surprise this week when the company announced that it had been breached and hackers were able to access users' personal information. Spammers were able to get a, quote-unquote, significant number of users' email addresses, postal addresses, but also encrypted passwords and encrypted security questions and answers. The now archaic internet company? I don't know. AOL's been around for a while. I guess archaic's an okay word to use there. They announced they're working with federal authorities and a forensics firm to investigate the breach, but they're urging users to change their passwords in the meantime.
Yeah, like anybody who knows how to make a bad joke on Twitter, I had no real idea that people were still using AOL.
There were many jokes on Twitter.
And the thing that was odd about AOL's initial response was that they were calling it, first off, they were referring to these as spoofing attacks, which I've heard of, but not really in that context. And secondly, people were complaining that their entire contact lists had been accessed, which sort of suggests that this was more than a spoofing attack.
Yeah, it was not the best response from AOL, I think, I can say.
So from AOL, from an archaic internet company to the forefront of technology, we'll go on to some Android news here. There's actually kind of a lot of Android news this month.
Ooh, sit tight.
Yeah, so Google decided to bolster its application marketplace, will bolster the security of its application marketplace, the Play Store, with a feature that will continually monitor applications on user devices to make sure they aren't acting maliciously or exceeding permissions with unwanted actions. This is a slight change from the existing systems, known as Bouncer and Verify apps, that scan Google's Play Store and warn users if there's a potential problem with an app that they're installing. Of course, the change here is that this goes a step farther, monitoring already installed applications to safeguard against developers who will sometimes send updates to installed apps, adding malicious or otherwise unwanted functionalities after these apps have been installed on user devices. Altogether, the measures are designed to curb the growing problem of malicious Android applications, which is another wonderful transition into the fact that our researcher friends here at Kaspersky Lab found in their annual financial fraud report that business is apparently booming for the writers of Android banking trojans. Also a bit of an oddity, also from our friends here, our researcher friends that is, they uncovered what they claim is the very first Android-based SMS trojan in the United States. So an SMS trojan is basically one that infects a user device, ascertains the ability to send text messages, and then does just that. It sends text messages. Only it sends them to premium rate services, which the attacker controls or perhaps at least profits from. And these premium rate services put the bill on the infected user. So these have been going on all around the world forever, but for whatever reason, they never made it into the U.S., and I talked with the researcher who wrote this analysis, and he said that he never really seemed to understand why SMS trojans for Android had never made it into the U.S. Someone has also developed a hack that bypasses the fingerprint scanner on the new Samsung Galaxy devices, which I guess is cool, but it doesn't really seem all that impactful to me. I think you wrote the story, Chris, so feel free to add in or move on if you want.
They used like a, what was it, like an epoxy or like some sort of...
like a rubbery some finger sort of plastic replacement. Yeah.
They basically like took a photocopy of a fingerprint and went into Photoshop. And it's a very, it sounds like a very long and drawn out process that would be difficult to replicate. But it, they actually wound up doing the same thing with the iTouch, the iPhone functionality last year, I think it was.
Sort of seems like a grandiose scheme to access someone's cell phone.
Yeah, when that user could easily just remotely wipe that anyway. Yeah. They wanted to, but I don't know. That's a big question mark there. Let's see. Oh, let's get to our monthly data breach roundup here. Seems like not a month goes by without somebody getting hacked. Lacey, the makers of those fancy orange external hard drives you see sometimes in Best Buy and other electronic stores, announced a few weeks ago that anyone who purchased something off their website in the last year, so these are people that don't go to those stores and they buy them online, had their information compromised. Apparently hackers got customers' names, addresses, email addresses, payment card info, expiration dates, you know, all those kind of things if you purchased a hard drive or any sort of other information storage device. Michaels also got hacked. The arts and crafts supply store first announced they're looking into the breach back in January, and they finally confirmed this month that they indeed were hacked, and almost 3 million users were impacted. They've got more than 1,000 stores across the U.S., and pretty much every single one of them from Alaska to Maine were breached.
So it was just the physical locations, right? Not the online? Well, I don't even know if people would buy craft goods on the internet, I guess.
These were point of sale devices in every one of their stores.
So pretty similar to the Target breach.
Yes, I mean, and this came out more or less around the same time, like maybe like a week or two after the Target breach. But they were point of sale devices at pretty much all of their North American stores in the U.S. And if you shop there from May to January, they apparently have your cards and expiration dates. So
if you did shop there from May to January, wait, from what months?
May last year to January this year.
Yeah, so May of 2013 to January of 2014, you probably want to go to your bank and get some new credit cards and maybe look into some credit monitoring, but I'm sure you've already received an email from Michaels about that.
Maybe they'll give you your own card.
Yeah, exactly.
TD Bank sent me my own card.
Just great. Without doing anything?
Yeah, well, I mean, this was related to the Target thing, but they obviously knew it was impacted, and they sent me a new one. So.
Man, I had to go into my bank like a sucker after the Target breach, and it took hours. Oof. Anyway, I think that's about all we have for today. So thanks for tuning in to the Kaspersky Daily Podcast, and make sure you check in with us next month. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Oh, no problem.
All right, talk to you soon.